Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah. Okay, toy department back in session. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are things on the West Coast?
Well, I don't know. I was thrown off when you said left and then west, as if there's something different. Or there's not. Yeah. Well, why'd you have to correct yourself? Just you couldn't just steer into the left?
I was really going for like the line from the Interpol song. How are things on the West? Because they got tripped up on left.
Ah, I see. Okay.
There's
sunny today. I took a nice walk because I rode the train to work.
There's a radio guy. I think he's still on the radio out there.
Guy.
Who used to call his show Right Thinking from the Left Coast, which used to just drive me insane.
Did he mean he was a right-minded person or a right-wing person?
No, well, yeah, I think he meant both.
Oh, well, he could only be one.
Yeah, so, which is also part of why you should drive me crazy.
Sorry, everybody. Yeah. We're equal opportunity and whatnot.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I was just out there, you know. I just got back from California.
I know, and it easily could have flown by me because, you know, you didn't let a brother know ahead of time. But
I wasn't really in your orbit, you know, 6 hours to the south.
I know, but you never know. You poke me at the right time, I might just drive that 6 hours.
Would I have had any shot to poke you in the 48 hours that I was in Los Angeles?
Absolutely not. No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Yeah. You predicted correctly. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Had a good time. Nice to get out of 15-20 degree weather for a bit.
If I recall, you actually may have told me, because I believe you said on the podcast you were going to see some shows.
Yeah, I went and saw some bands. I went to the K-Rock Acoustic Christmas over at the Forum. Had a couple of nights.
Anybody stand out?
No. Or not in a good way, I guess would be the best way to say that.
People stand out in a bad way?
Well, 30 Seconds to Mars stood out to me in a bad way.
Jared Leto's vanity band?
It's getting to be more that way. It's just him and the brother now. So it's just Jared Leto and a drummer, and it doesn't really sound like they're playing any of it. And I don't know.
Was that just their acoustic setup or no?
No, it was a full on super loud setup. Oh. Yeah, like just lots of tracks. And I don't know, maybe it's just because it was a radio show and not their crowd, but a lot of the over-the-top, like, we want you to jump, get on the floor, get low, and, you know.
People just kind of stared at him.
All that stuff, yeah, like, you know, people are, like, sort of half doing it. It just feels a little bit flat. Smashing Pumpkins, maybe the best I've ever heard, Smashing Pumpkins.
No kidding.
Yeah, like, really tight and solid together, seem to have a good time. Broke out a cover of The Cure's Friday I'm in Love sort of out of nowhere with James Iha on vocals, and it was good. It was like legit good.
Maybe there's something to being grown-ups.
Yeah. I think there might be. Even Third Eye Blind, which was on that build, also did not sound like a train wreck in the way that they used to be back when Third Eye Blind was like famous.
You know what? I gotta say, I saw them at, what was it, maybe an Outside Lands a couple of years ago, and expected just kind of a train wreck. And what I got instead was actually a quite very good performance of the Third Eye Blind hits that I did quite enjoy when they were on the radio.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I was like, you know what? They got some good songs. This was fun.
Yep. They have good songs, more than a few, you know, and they've all aged very well, I think, you know.
Yes, as pop songs, absolutely.
Yes, as pop songs. One artist that I did think was interesting that I don't know if we ever talked about in the show, and we were sort of talking about music homework. Are you familiar with Billie Eilish?
I know the name, but I'm not sure if I've heard it.
She's a 16-year-old girl from L.A. I think her family's British, but they live in L.A. And there's definitely a real next big thing vibe about her. Her like streaming numbers are crazy. And I'd sort of be curious for your take on that if you wanted to check out her record.
Yeah. E-L-L-I-S-H?
B-I-L-L-I-E-I-E-I-L-I-S-H.
I-L. Well, I made a mess of that writing it down, but I think I'll still get it.
All right. We'll get to more homework later in the show, and we've got a ton of TV and
– Really, it's all visual media this week. It's a heavy watch week.
We watched a lot of stuff. Should we start with the GOAT of reality shows coming back?
Yeah, is it the GOAT? Have we had that conversation? Is that maybe a conversation for next week or the week after?
I guess we could have that conversation next week. I mean, look, I love the challenge, but I don't know that I can think of anything better than Top Chef from a reality standpoint.
For my money, it's probably one of those two. As much as I do quite love Bar Rescue, and The Great British Baking Show, if you count that. That's more of a cooking show, I guess. In terms of reality shows, it's those two, and I don't know, man. I don't know which I like better. But having Top Chef back was a reminder that it is no shrinking violet in a competition with The Challenge for greatest reality show currently airing.
Yeah, they just know what they're doing, and they know how to run a show. Although, I will say, did you felt like they laid the Kentucky on a little thick in episode one?
Yes, and can I tell you why I think they did that?
Because they're not going to talk about it anymore the whole rest of the show?
Yes, because I think they're going to do – there's going to be a lot of bourbon, you know what I mean? But yeah. They're going to do Kentucky food stuff, probably some fried crap. But the Kentucky chick got eliminated, so I don't think anyone's going to cook, hey, this is my traditional Kentucky take on blah. It's going to be the other way around. It's going to be this is my – fancy pants take on Kentucky.
Interesting. I do want to correct you there, though, because wasn't it the Cincinnati chick that got eliminated?
I think she's from Cincinnati, but isn't she the one person who actually cooks in Kentucky?
No, there's a woman from Paducah, Kentucky, who I believe is still in the competition.
All right, so maybe it was one of two. But I'm pretty sure the lady who got eliminated was a cook in Kentucky, no? Am I crazy?
Cincinnati is rather near Kentucky, but
it's
not
that's
Kentucky.
What it is. Maybe she was the closest to the actual location or something.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about less than an hour from Louisville. So.
Yeah, well, Cincinnati, hellhole that it is, you fly into Kentucky conveniently.
Yes, the airport is in Kentucky. Cincinnati, man, that's shots fired at Cincinnati.
The entire state of Ohio can suck it at me.
all right, so who for you stood out as a contender?
Okay, well, first of all, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that on last week's program, you alerted me to, hey, a guy who is the proprietor of a restaurant I frequent here in Minneapolis is on this show, and undoubtedly he distinguished himself immediately as one of, if not the most entertaining personalities and a chef to be reckoned with.
I thought so. I mean, Justin won the Quickfire Challenge, or was on
the
winning team.
Quickfire Challenge.
And kind of really led the team, really, when they won the Quickfire Challenge, I should say.
Yeah, and he was first place, too, wasn't he, in the...
I believe that he finished second in his, I believe he was a place in the elimination challenge. Yeah.
But he really impressed in, but if he was second, then it was one of the ones where they were like, these are both incredible. The third one, not as much.
Yeah.
And he was also super funny in his one-on-one camera shots.
There was the one where he said he was like 80% bourbon and marijuana, but like the numbers didn't add up.
Not at all. But to be fair, he's mostly bourbon and weed, so like what do you expect?
Right.
He was just great. I loved him. I loved his whole thing. The style, and I also love the like his restaurant. Having never been there, it sounds awesome, and I can understand why you go there.
The bourbon list is outstanding, by the way. Top notch on the cocktail side.
But the second thing I want to say is the most excited I was in Last Chance Kitchen.
Oh, really? No, see,
Sherry's back.
I didn't watch Last Chance Kitchen. That was a mistake on my part, clearly.
Bro, it was a huge mistake. I'm going to spoil it for you right now. Carrie is back. Brother Luck is back. And some other dude from a different season that my girlfriend really likes is also back. He's like a weird Top Chef super fan who also was on Top Chef.
Okay.
I think his name is Jim or something.
That's not ringing a bell, but I'm sure I will recognize him. I'm stoked for Brother Luck, though, because I really do enjoy Brother Luck.
And Carrie's my favorite. Damn. And the two of them, or the three of them, knocked the other girl off. What was it that she... Gosh, I have such a terrible memory from 6 days ago or whatever it was. But they had her make essentially her... Oh, it was the biscuit thing, right?
Yeah.
Because she messed up the biscuits, which are like her thing as a near Kentucky chef. And she, they had her do another biscuit thing, and they once again were not good, and she's gone.
Oh, no.
In this case, it was a time issue. Like, they didn't get time to bake enough, I guess. But either way, she gone. And three formers, two of whom are from last season, the one season I've watched, one of whom was my favorite character, are back. So that was very exciting for me. I have some other characters I wrote down, though.
Okay.
First of all, the Atherton private chef is the most Atherton private chef I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, they've clearly set him up to be the villain. He's getting the villain at it, 100%.
And he is just he's just so from the hair down to the weird cocky things he says is like, if you had asked me, you know, shown me his footage and been like, where's he? I'd be like, probably like a Marin County private chef. And that's exactly what he is.
Atherton is on the peninsula, no?
Either way.
Okay.
Atherton is fancy.
Yeah, it's like it's next to Palo Alto, I believe. So it's the height of Silicon Valley wealth.
It's where the Warriors owners live. Yeah. You know what I mean? Sad Boston chef I quite enjoyed. The like weird tall guy.
Oh, gotcha.
Seemed like he was both half asleep and about to cry.
That's Brian.
I believe it is Brian. Yes. Yeah.
Did you, because we talked about this coming in, that you said there weren't really any San Francisco chefs. In addition to Atherton guy, there's Michelle.
Yes, who cooks
at Bar Risotto, which I am not familiar with. I don't know if you are.
Nor am I, but yeah, I did notice there was a Bay Area chef. Yeah. I don't feel like she was on the list that I saw before, but either way, yes. What did I write down? Oh, the new mom brain chef who kept being like, I just had a baby. I don't know what the heck's going on here.
It's going to be a gimmick.
I thought that was hilarious. So I'm having fun.
It's good times.
Nene. I enjoyed Nene.
I enjoyed Nene as well. Pink jumpsuit. You know, she's just like, I'm just here to cook my food and rock a pink jumpsuit, and she did.
Yeah, that's what she did. Yep.
I understand that her Twitter handle is I Dream of Nene, which is fantastic. I'm all in on Nene. And I thought, by the way, not really, like, if soggy biscuits, if flavorful but soggy biscuits was the worst thing that was served, like...
On week one? Yeah, this is competitive.
Pretty strong group of food, I thought, from the contestants. I don't know if there's anybody that stuck out to me in the way that some of just the real superstars that you remember on the show did right away. But I think there's going to be a very high floor on this season is kind of the feeling. I feel like everyone's going to be pretty competent the whole way through.
I agree with that because I didn't actually even write down any food. And like, you know, when we were talking about the show a little bit last season, there was some crazy food that I was like the stuff the Joes were doing at various points of the season was like, oh my God, we talked about the dishes for 3 minutes on the podcast.
Yeah.
And there was nothing quite like that on this episode, but it was episode one. It did just seem that like the worst things were stuff they had to nitpick about to like insult too heavily.
Yeah. Although I will say that Carrot Top Tagliatelle, that looked, that looked really amazing. I don't remember who made it, but there were some nice looking dishes. And then Michelle Menor, Natalie Moronsky was the winner. The Natalie from Philly,
right?
Do you see her as the chef to beat at this point?
No, I'm telling you, I see your guy as the guy.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what it is. It might just be that I like his personality and he said the thing about whiskey and weed, but I am all in on him. If I had to, like, I don't think he has the favorite's odds, but that's where I would put my money.
I will say he has been buying up restaurants over here, and I don't know if that is a bet on his fame, you know what I mean? Or if that's spending of a check. You know what I mean?
yeah, that's interesting.
I forget. I was going to say, but I forgot who's furnishing the check this year on the show. But
I think it's, if I recall, it's water, same as it was last year.
Water? Just water?
Pellegrino, maybe?
Oh, yeah, Pellegrino. There you go. Okay, yeah. That'd be great if it was just water. And $100,000 furnished by water.
Yeah. It could just be a bet on his fame, but if he's betting on his fame, you'd imagine he's sticking around for at least a little while.
Yeah, that's also true. That's also true. So there you go. Good bet if you're in a Top Chef pool at home, which I sometimes am, although not this year.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'd like to get in a Top Chef pool.
All right. Well, it might not be too late to start one.
Should we start a pool? Maybe that's homework for us, is to try to figure out a Top Chef betting scheme.
Okay. Let's throw that in the homework, too.
We can spitball that over the week.
All right. So, Top Chef, still great as ever. And shout out to Padma.
Ugh, Padma. You know what? And I don't ever remember Glasses Guy's name. But I enjoyed him this week. And the Kentucky guy.
Is that Graham Elliott? You mean the judge? Maybe. The judge with the fancy outfits and the glasses sometimes?
Yes. Yeah. With the weird square glasses.
Yeah, I believe that's Graham Elliott.
But I also quite enjoyed the like local Kentucky judge who sounded like a Chicago gangster, basically.
I will say I have eaten at Churchill Downs a couple of times, and I did not think it was amazing. Maybe I wasn't getting his food. I don't know. But
I have a feeling, yeah, where were you? Because then they were like, has anyone been here? And the one lady was like, the infield. And they were like, oh, yeah. What'd you do there? She's like, drink.
I know. It made it sound like she was like getting some on the infield or something like that. Like,
well, I think like if you're not like the options are like drinking and taking your clothes off ridiculously if you're in the infield.
Yeah.
So who knows?
It sounded like it was all scandalous. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. All right, let's move on to.
But I also feel like, by the way, that's also homework. I feel like we're gonna check in on Top Chef at least a little bit most weeks.
I agree with that. We'll be watching, so it's it's barely homework, right?
True story.
All right, a show that I also feel like is probably gonna be a part of our lives at least until it's done is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel season 2. I gotta be honest, I don't have a ton to add. Because I feel like this is basically just an extension of season 1 so far. I'm through 2 episodes.
Yes, me too. I would like to see more stand-up, which is the same way I felt towards the end of last season. But otherwise, it's the same joyous thing. All I wrote down about it is, for God's sakes, this is for me, you're really hitting the pleasure centers with the Jewiness and the like Amy Sherman Palladino / old 20 or whenever it is, what are we, 50s, 60s, like talky stuff. I'm giggling through 65% of this show.
Yeah.
Just sort of in delight.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of giggling in delight. I would agree with that. If I'm going to nitpick, I would say Midge is getting too nicely dressed at this point. Like, Like, she's like the dresses are great, but like every time she steps out of the house, she looks like vintage Audrey Hepburn now.
Yeah, that's true.
Which, I don't know, seems a bit much for the character.
Maybe. I do think we have seen her in these first two episodes a lot in performative situations, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you're right. I mean, there's a sort of unrealness to all of it. But yeah. I don't know if that makes it any less enjoyable for me.
It does not. It does not ruin my enjoyment. I'm just picking nits.
Yeah.
It's interesting, actually, because I definitely had, like, kind of really keyed in episode two. Like, I did not buy the dad's transformation into Parisian. And I was right. Like, come on, this is way out of his character. And then, of course, that turned out to be the show is just setting me up for that. So I withdrew my objection.
There were a couple of things like that in episode two, actually. And the other one is failing to spring to mind. But that was one. And there was another time where I was like, oh, okay, they were on top of this, too.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed the episode on the whole. I thought it turned out to be a delightful exploration of their marriage and trying to recapture the flame and their dedication to each other and how that paralleled with Midge's situation.
Yeah.
Are you where are you at on Joel?
I'm coming around on Joel.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the show is certainly making an attempt to humanize Joel this season.
He's trying. Now what he is now is like a separated dad who's trying, and a son of a, you know, disheveled business owner who's trying.
Yeah. I feel like people are mad about that. There are people who are mad about this, but I'm not one of those people.
No, well, I don't understand. Why would you prefer him to be a caricaturish antagonist to a fully drawn human being?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, she married the guy. If he was a total piece of crap,
right?
Like, this is a smart woman. Why did this? You know,
why
what
would
mean?
You do that?
I wouldn't have bought that as much as you're understanding why. First of all, that they had a really loving relationship where they truly had fallen for each other, and it fell apart, but it doesn't mean it never existed. And secondly, that he's a human being.
Yeah. And a bit of, and certainly a flawed human being, but a human being with good and bad. I agree. This show is it's breezy, it's fun, like it's an easy place to spend a few minutes, right? You know,
but I also think it's incredibly well executed, and it does have a thing or two to say. Nothing wild or wholly original, but a thing or two to say about gender dynamics and you know, that sort of thing.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that. It nails the comedy better than many of the shows that are set in this world.
Yeah, I would say if there's one complaint about the comedy, it never would have happened then. In terms of like a woman or even a comedian to some degree breaking down the comedy of it the way she does in the final stand-up set we see. It's more like today's reflection on that time than it is comedy of the time, I think. But it's very funny, and she is great. I mean, for someone who had never done comedy before, to execute the stand-up bits that well, I think is a testament to what a great acting job she's doing.
Yeah, and then, you know, when she's off stage, you know, that rat-a-tat dialogue I don't think is really easy to nail either. And
no, not at all. Not at all. It reminds me so much of Jennifer Jason Leigh in Hudsucker Proxy.
Ah, I would not have called that up, but I get what you mean. That's a really excellent performance, and she's deserving of many of the kudos that she's gotten for it.
Yeah, and the woman playing Susie getting some extra PT this year, I quite enjoy. She is very funny.
Yeah, the whole detour with her potentially being rubbed out by gangsters.
Yes.
that was a really great arc. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was that was all just character acting. That the entire arc was made because nothing happens. It's a weird side story where literally nothing happens to anybody. And it was just highly enjoyable because of the sort of repartee between the three characters.
Yeah. You know, that's Alex Borstein, who I believe is the mom on Family Guy.
You mean the woman who plays Susie?
Yeah.
I did know, I had heard her name. I did not realize she was the mom on Family Guy. That's funny.
So there you go. All right. So we're all in on Maisel, and I imagine we'll continue to be.
Indeed. And I think we'll probably check back in at some point, but I'm with you that, like, from a broad perspective, there's not much to add to what we saw last year. Just it's a really enjoyable, fun time.
Yeah, and it's weird. I sort of feel like I know the rest of the season is going to be pretty exactly this good. It's another one with like the range of outcomes is fairly small. You know what I mean? Like
perhaps. Yeah.
You know what you're getting.
I will say two things I wrote down that I wanted to specifically reference is like if I had to describe the essence of this show. I might, besides like, you know, the sort of easy plot description of 60s wife, you know, breaks free on her own as a comedian. It's a hilarious festival of helpless men.
Yeah, they are. None of them know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's so funny. And it's just like women having to deal with these ridiculous helpless men. Constantly. Yep. And then there was a Sylvia Plath joke that was brilliant where I believe it was when someone is talking to Midge about like, have you seen any, like an analyst or something like that? Or to say,
yeah, she gave it was, I believe it was the woman in France. She gave her after she had gone on stage and given the, you know, the super confessional performance that ended kind of on a really sad note. She gave her a card and said, you should go see this. It's really helped my friend Sylvia Plath.
Exactly. Which is just like a pretty dark joke, but also so hilarious. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. Nice little Easter egg there.
For yes.
Amy Sherman Palladino. All right. So Homecoming. Did you finish it?
I did.
I did as well. Still on board?
I'm not off board. First of all, I did not know until midway through when a friend happened to mention it that this is based on a podcast.
Yeah.
And I, having not listened to the podcast, but heard acclaim for it from that friend, I have to say I can imagine it being a better podcast, or if not a better like more suited to podcast in some ways. Than it was to visual medium.
Interesting, because I mean, I really do feel like the show has a super distinct visual style and.
Yeah, but I feel like that's catalog. More Sam Esmail than it is Homecoming, if that makes sense.
It is, yeah. I mean, Sam Esmail and team certainly have their stamp all over this, but that's the show you're watching. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, I think any show Sam Esmail chose to make. Would have had a distinct and impressive. That's why I didn't mean to say better.
Right, but that's what I mean. It's like I'm guessing if you're saying it's better as a podcast, I'm saying you're losing that thing that the Sam Esmail part of it, which to me is one of the more interesting parts.
But I didn't say better. I said it might be more suited.
More suited. Gotcha. Okay.
And that's why I sort of corrected myself from saying better because this. I think this was probably more visually interesting than it. Was anything else interesting? And that's sort of my point is like, I'm not sure the story itself, plot wise, played as well as a visual story as it sounds like it did as a podcast story. Just because ultimately, what happened here? I think the answer is not a ton.
Well, what do you mean by not a ton?
Well, like, what from like a understanding of the situation standpoint, the whole it's 10 episodes of a mystery where at the end I was kind of like, yeah, okay, I guess that's pretty much what I guess I would have figured, and okay, there was no moment of. Reveal or anything or of answering questions that was like aha. It was just like it all sort of played out, and I guess it technically was a mystery in that we didn't exactly know what was going to happen, but like when it happened it was just kind of like, all right, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't know if I ever thought of this as like a What's in the Box show. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, there is no great reveal of what's in the box. You probably figured it out by episode 7 or 8. I would, you know, the main gist of what's happening. But I do sort of think that, you know, the way that the show ends, you sort of realize like, oh, well, you know, this homecoming project may be part of a larger web of stuff, and that the season can, you know, that you could potentially explore that in more seasons.
Yeah, I guess. But is that really the way it ended, or is that from the beginning? Because whatever this Geist company is very shrouded in secrecy and mystery.
I mean, I assume that you watched the all the way through the credits, right? And you saw the...
Oh, no. I didn't.
Yeah, you may have missed one scene sort of there at the end.
And wait, then how long is the scene? Should we pause and should I watch the scene right now and see if
it's pretty short.
On the show?
It's pretty short. Yeah. Do you want to? I can hit pause on the recording if you want to watch real quick.
I think that would be a great twist. I'm going to turn on my PlayStation and fire up the old Amazon right now.
Okay, here we go. Okay, so you're back.
I'm back.
You've watched the final scene.
Yep, very short, and I don't know quite what to make of it. Do you have an analysis of it?
So, and this is obviously, we're telling you what happens at the very last frame, so it's deep spoiler. So we've now got Audrey, right, who we thought was the assistant. You know, you'd seen that scene.
Well, it seems like she was at one point.
Right. I mean, she was. She was the assistant. And now she's in charge. We don't know. I mean, certainly, right, she could have been maybe a spy for Mr. Geist all along.
Or, yeah, we have no idea.
Or she just was recently promoted on top of Bobby Cannavale's character. And she's basically making him sign this thing where he's going to Michael Cohen on the sword there. And at the end, he's kind of like, you know, you guys will take this into consideration, right? That I'm being a team player. And she's like, yeah, whatever. And he leaves. And she takes this roller application, which I believe that Bobby Cannavale had referred to earlier in the episode or earlier in the series. And like puts some stuff on her wrist and then sort of slips back in her chair. So
generally looks panicked.
Yeah. So you get into the question of what the hell is in that lab tube and
what
does
it
does
have to do with everything else?
And what does it have to do with everything else? And I would say the other thing, right, is when Heidi and what's the name of the soldier? I'm so bad with names now. Walter, thank you. Walter Cruz. When they meet up in California, right, and they're at that chair and he doesn't recognize her.
Uh-huh.
He turns the fork.
Yes.
Right? In the way that he used to turn the pen.
Right.
So does he really not recognize her? Is he just pretending to not recognize her? And is that supposed to be a signal?
Oh no, or... I thought he clearly does not recognize her, but that's just I thought that was signaling, like, you know, we are forevermore ourselves.
Yeah.
No matter what you do to our memories.
Could be that. Or it could be, you know, because look, memory is a little bit malleable in this show, right? Like you could lose it
and get it back
and there are things that trigger it, right? You know what I mean?
That's how I interpreted that whole last scene with the two of them is Julia Roberts has the map that she thinks will be a trigger. And she's deciding whether or not to try to trigger his memories.
Yeah.
And ultimately she decides not to, but is then, comforted by the fact that he's still Walter Cruz who turns the fork like he turned a pen.
Yeah.
Just now it's a fork instead of a pen. And I figured before I saw that last scene, I thought, well, this is over and they'll never see each other again.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely think it's possible they may see each other again, and he may know more. He may remember more than he's letting on. I think that's a distinct possibility.
I think undoubtedly that final scene suggests there's more show to be made here.
Yes.
I don't know if it will be made, but I don't know if that's been announced or anything, but obviously that's what that means, is there's more there, or why bother?
Right.
But I don't know. That seems like it would be a totally different story, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, look, I think season two is going to be pretty different, I would imagine.
But I mean, like, a story without, I don't know, it felt very final. The Walter and, I don't remember Julia Roberts' name.
Heidi.
Heidi. The Walter Heidi story felt finished to me when he left the diner.
I don't even know if we're finished there, you know. By the way, those two were excellent. And really the, so much of the show depends on the relationship dynamic between Heidi and Walter, and understanding that they have a deeper, interesting kind of connection, right? And that the chemistry between those two, I thought really well played.
You have to buy it without really seeing, without really seeing either of them interact with anybody else in a similar way.
Yeah, agreed.
Which is not something I even necessarily thought about until you just brought up their relationship, but that is pretty interesting and unique, and I agree, they're both very convincing. Also, I'm not sure this was the most, like, awesome or impressive Bobby Cannavale role, but it was, to me, just another indication of what a tremendous actor this guy is.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got a he's got a type, you know what I mean? And this character as well is sort of within that type, that sort of smug, smarmy.
Yeah, but there's some layers to this guy, man, and I think he surprises me pretty consistently with, like, how he plays those layers. Because you're right. I think he has a look, is what he has.
Yeah.
But I feel like type-wise, granularly anyway, he plays a lot of different types within that look.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it's definitely a scale. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
But there's certainly some commonality if you're rolling through a Bobby Cannavale's IMDb page. Some commonalities.
Yes, and I think that's why I said this isn't, like, the most impressive or crazy role for him. Because there are probably a couple on that IMDb list that are like, yeah, that's very different. And this is not that, but it is subtly very good.
Yeah. I mean, look, you can say the same thing about Michael Shannon. And it doesn't mean they're not great actors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Stephen James, who plays Walter Cruz.
Phenomenal.
Really seems like that dude's going to be a movie star, right?
Why wouldn't he be? Good-looking, plays a complex, interesting character tremendously. Yeah, why not?
Really, really has a presence. And
by the way, there is a season two of the podcast. I don't know how that relates.
Yeah, me neither.
I did not realize the podcast is so star-studded.
There are some differences, from what I understand, in the podcast and the show.
Okay.
But I haven't listened to the podcast, so couldn't tell you what they are.
Yeah, I haven't either, and I don't really listen to, like, story podcasts like that. Almost all of my podcast consumption is newsy. I mean, it's mostly sports, but it's either news or interviews, essentially.
Gotcha.
Or sports analysis or interviews, I guess. Sports and media analysis or interviews. Now I keep expanding the list, but you get my point. It's not a lot of narrative stuff.
So you never did, like, Serial or anything like that?
Nope.
It's really the first season of Serial is quite something.
I like books on tape, but for whatever reason, I just never got it. My podcast app is just, like, you know, it's filled with information, and I get so bogged down in it anyway, I just don't want to add to it.
It is hard to slog through it, and there definitely are. There's no time pressure with those narrative podcasts, right? You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, I'll get to it at some point, and then you never
do. Even stuff like Dissect, which I love because there's so little time pressure to listen to a man analyze, you know, a Kendrick or Kanye album, like, those pile up too.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, so before this one piles up on people's phones, let's jump into Escape at Dannemora, which we also are catching up on now.
Yeah, we were both kind of not necessarily lukewarm, although probably that's accurate, but just kind of like, yeah, it's hard to say exactly what we're dealing with here after one episode. Would you say your opinion has changed?
No. I'm kind of in the same place. I'm still watching this every week.
I think what's been reinforced for me is the other half of what we said, because I agree with you. I still don't. It's still not. It's a thing, exactly. Or like, I don't know what it is as a thing, but the acting is really excellent.
The acting is really excellent, and I get that the show really wants to linger on the humanity of the people involved. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
And they're all mesmerizing. I can't. So like, it doesn't matter. It almost doesn't matter that I don't know exactly what I'm watching, because every time any of the principal characters are on the screen, which is all the time, I'm mesmerized.
Mm. Yeah, see, I still feel like it's moving a little too slowly.
Okay. I mean, nothing is happening.
Yeah.
I can't. Well, although, are you fully caught up through four episodes?
Yeah. I mean, it's. Yeah, saying more nothing is happening is not quite accurate. Like, we're clearly moving towards, I don't think it's a much of a spoiler to say that a show called Escape at Dannemora has a escape
an
in
escape.
It.
Yeah. Yes.
And we're definitely moving towards that.
We're rolling downhill, don't you think?
We're just moving towards it pretty slowly.
It's a big boulder, but I would say it is both velocity and acceleration are increasing.
Yes. It's like, you know, in Shawshank, right? When to escape out of the in Shawshank, I'm spoiling Shawshank now as well.
Oh God!
Right? It's like, you know, Tim Robbins has to crawl through like a river of shit, basically, right?
And I don't think basically. I mean, I think that's literally both what he does and refers to it as.
In this show, we're just crawling through a river of scenes from the seamstress shop, basically.
To some degree, and I thought. It's almost a hilarious metaphor for that Benicio del Toro stops helping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, we're escaping, but I'm just going to hang out in the seamstress shop while you do all the hard work. Which I guess is your privilege when you're like a prison boss of the prisoners.
That's
you're like
rules.
The prisoner who is boss. I will say I've been resisting the Google because I don't really know exactly what happens, and I don't want to spoil it too much for myself. You know, like you said, I have a feeling we all know there's an escape, but I don't know how it plays out precisely.
Oh, so, did you not remember this from the news? Like, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it. I just don't remember the terminus.
Oh, okay.
Like, I remember, those guys who escaped from prison, yes, sure. But I don't remember, like, also exactly what happened with the woman who helped them or her husband, or, you know, if someone might have died. I can't remember.
Well, spoiler alert, it's not going to be exactly like the Orange is the New Black prison escape. I can promise you that.
Thank
you. Okay.
Thank you. That escape performed by my friend Julie in what was it, season 4 or something?
Oh, yeah, that wasn't even the escape I was talking about. I was talking about when Pensatucky went to the the amusement park. But yes.
Just, came on back. No, it's not like that either.
Nope. Or the one where there was a hole in the fence and everyone escaped for 20 minutes. Wasn't like that.
Yep. Anyway, I haven't Googled, but I will say I'm fascinated by the character who Benicio is playing.
Yeah, no, look, the show is all interesting, and I'm going to keep watching. But, like, this is not, like, are you going around and going to anybody, like, going, hey, you watching that Escape at Dannemora? Like, that is not a thing that I'm doing. You know what I mean?
But literally yesterday, someone said that to me at work, and I was like, you know what? I am really enjoying all of the acting performances, was the thing I said, as opposed to, you know what? I just don't know what in the heck I'm doing every week.
It helps that there's not a lot of Sunday night competition on right now, I will say.
Yeah, well, there's like a holiday lull of TV, I feel like. We're about to get blitzed with movies. But there's a bit of a lull TV wise, so I think it's easier to find the time for something like this. But I really, especially Paul Dano, I think this is, and Patricia Arquette, it's just really, the acting is phenomenal.
Yeah, the Patricia Arquette's performance is going to win a lot of awards, I think. Is my feeling. So,
and Paul Dano is really playing against type and knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, yeah, sure is. All right, do you want to move on to the comedies real quick? We get some stand up. We should get rolling through from the homework as well.
Yes, I think these will be easier to blast through, especially bumping mics. Let's start there, because I almost think it's unimpeachable as like a bit of roasty fun.
Yeah. Look, for those of you who didn't watch, Bumping Mics is Jeff Ross and Dave Attell. The name of the show comes from the idea of, like, when you get somebody really good with a zinger, you bump mics as a little show of respect. Like, ah, you got me.
Like a fist bump.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a fist bump, but with a microphone. And so this show is basically set up for them to sort of roast each other, roast the audience, roast their friends. Yes. Yeah. Here's my one beef with the show, because I think that part of it is right. I just, and it sounds meaner than it is, but it needed less Jeffrey Ross and Dave Attell, who I think are quite funny people, but like there's an incredible roster of guest stars who come up on the show that are given little, and in some cases nearly nothing to do, and it just seems weird. Like, I just, like, can I get an actual set from Amy Schumer? Like, even if it's a short one, or Gilbert Gottfried, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's Michael Che, Hasan Minhaj?
If not a set, more interplay. Now, some guys, I thought Hasan Minhaj and Michael Che in particular knew what to do and went up and put a chokehold on the stage and effectively sort of owned the 2 minutes they had. But I would say if I had one significant criticism, because this is just, I like the roasty stuff. I have fun with it. It's not something I like set aside time for, but, you know, throw it on at the end of the night and giggle and I enjoy it. But my one significant criticism would be, I actually think it would have been better if they had been an hour long each, and we might not have watched it in 1 week, but if you had then given those comedians some real space. And I wonder, and I thought about this live, and I think there was enough cuts that it's certainly possible. I wonder if there is like an extended version where when it happened live, they didn't bring up Amy Schumer, you know, Nikki Glaser and another lady.
It was Scherzinger, wasn't it, I think?
No, it wasn't Schlesinger. But
Schlesinger, sorry, excuse me. It was like three. There was three, like, legit women comics, like, standing up there at once, and they just kind of, like, rushed right through it. You know what I mean?
Right. I wonder if that was 10 minutes live and 2 minutes on the special.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to guess it's probably more than that, yeah.
Because if it was 10 minutes live, I think that would have been a better execution of the show. But I think when you cut something, a show like that, down to 30 minutes, sometimes by trying to pick the best stuff, you take us out of the flow in a way that makes it a little less effective.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And it was fine. And then the shows were funny, and people got some good lines in. It's a quick way to kill 90 minutes. But like I said, I would like to see more space. And I think it sounds like you agree.
I do agree. I just think I probably have a slightly more of an affinity for that stuff at its baseline than you do.
Perhaps, yeah. Which is not to say that I didn't enjoy it. I like David Tell a lot.
Did you watch Roast Battle?
I think so. I've watched more than one, Jeffrey Ross roast thing, but I don't usually watch those, like, the 2 hour celebrity ones. You know what I mean? So
No, I'm talking about Roast Battle.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I've watched some Jeffrey Ross, but not the 2 hour ones, so that kinda has to be Roast Battle, doesn't it? It was maybe on Comedy Central, right? It was like half hour, you know.
No. Maybe it's on Comedy Central. But it's a full season competition show.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched some of that.
So it'll be like maybe one episode is four or five battles, basically, of just two professional comedians insulting each other for, you know, 5 or 7 minutes, and then Jeff Ross judging it.
Yeah, I don't know why you keep saying this. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Because you were describing it in a weird way that made me unsure if you'd actually seen it.
Okay.
That's why. I kept saying like the Jeff Ross special on the, but it's like a TV show that airs over several weeks. That
I watched a few of those.
Okay,
all right.
Anyway, I like that.
Okay, yeah,
you that was all I had to say.
Clearly, you have a greater passion than I do.
you know the thing with the, come on.
All right, let's move on to Russell Brand.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what you thought.
I thought that. You know, this sort of comedy.
Oh, wait, sorry. This is terrible interruption.
Okay.
Quickly. There was a Hanukkah joke. There were two jokes that I wrote down from Bumping Mics. One was a Hanukkah joke where I don't even remember which one it was. But I think it was a tell, maybe. It was like, yeah, you know, I'm Jewish. Jeff's Jewish. Your boss has probably told you about it. And he just, like, breezed right through it that I thought was hilarious. And also, because there is something indelible about the Jewish joke that also implies Jews run the world. And there was like, a two-minute bit about a Cosby OJ podcast.
Yes.
That I thought truly was hilarious.
Well, they had like a Blue Apron sponsor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Super dark and, you know, but I was, that was the part, that was probably the spot where I like actually laughed out loud the hardest.
Hmm. Do you have any of those moments from the Brand thing that like really jump out? Did you write down any lines?
No.
I feel like,
I wrote down one thing.
The point that I was kind of starting to make there before we detoured into OJ's podcast.
Before my stupid interruption.
It's almost more a collection of stories than stand-up, per se.
Not even that, I would say. It is a TED Talk.
Damn it! Why'd you have to say that?
Oh, was that what you were going
to
say?
The next thing I was going to go to was why are all of these stand-up specials now becoming TED Talks? That's the like the my one takeaway from this is like we don't all have to make Nanette, you know, especially because very few people are going to do it as well as Nanette, you know?
I don't think that's what he's doing though. I would differ with you there.
I'm not saying that he's trying to do that, but it all has to become a thing where I'm not sure I want Russell Brand telling me what the media's intent is and speaking to you at the halls of power. You know what I mean? Like, I just...
Okay, but that has always been Russell Brand's thing.
Is it? Or is Russell Brand's thing to be more like, hello, I'm the goofy guy who likes sex and, you know, does the Cockney accent.
That's who he is as a actor in Hollywood. He has always been a weird, semi-intellectual deep diver as a comedian. Maybe historically a little more spiritual than political.
Right.
But not dissimilar. And what stands out to me, what makes me fascinated by Russell Brand and super interested in anything he puts out of this fashion, which I think it's fair to say is not entirely a stand-up special, although he's very funny and sometimes says very funny things.
Sometimes, yeah. I felt like this, it lagged at times. When it was funny, there definitely had funny moments, and when it was funny, it's pretty funny. And then there were other times where it was like, yeah.
Well, there are other times where I don't think it's funny and it's a little hippy-dippy. But I find his use of language fascinating and frankly kind of unbelievable.
Really?
Yes. He has an odd lyrical way. There are times it feels almost Clive Frazier-ish, which if you're not an NBA fan, Clive Frazier is a former NBA player who's a Knicks broadcaster who has this oddly mellifluous voice and uses big words like a man who has word of the day toilet paper. So there are times where it feels like, okay, you use the thesaurus for that section. But I don't know that he does. I think he has this weird lyrical way of describing things that I find kind of enchanting.
Yeah, you definitely have a greater appreciation for the comedic stylings of Russell Brand than I do.
I'm not sure I have a greater appreciation for the comedic stylings because I think he is hit and miss as a make you laugh comedian. I think as a speaker, I find him fascinating.
Yeah.
And even if I don't think that what he says is always necessarily as clever or revolutionary as he believes it to be, I find it interesting. I find him interesting.
I was going to say, I would downgrade fascinating to occasionally interesting for me.
I think the content is occasionally interesting. I'm saying to me, the personality and presentation is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Aaron.
No, I mean, obviously we disagree about that. I'm just trying to make it clear precisely what I'm saying.
Yeah. To me, like, there's a lot of reliance on Goofy dancing around the stage to bring some of these jokes home, which I feel like is, again, we talked about this last week. It's a bit of a Dane Cookism. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's separate from what I'm talking about, though. I think it's the moments where he goes on these more philosophically bent rants that do have jokes within them, but that are, you know, he says at the beginning, and it may seem cheesy, but I think he's being sincere, that, like, he goes on stage in an attempt to sort of connect to people. And I think a lot of comedians feel that way. But I think he means it more frankly than a lot of comedians do, if that makes sense. I think a lot of comedians mean it metaphorically in a way. And he means it pretty literally.
He certainly is needy about it.
Yes, he's trying to connect to a spiritual oneness or something. And again, that is hippy dippy and not necessarily my thing as a human. But the way he presents it and the way he speaks in particular, I find it very kind of fascinating.
Yeah. All right, I found it less fascinating.
I think he's as profound as he thinks he is.
Yeah, I did enjoy his use of video, but again, that's another thing I feel like we're now seeing in a lot of these specials, you know?
Yeah, but like him roasting himself was, I think, pretty funny.
Yeah, at times it was.
Yeah.
It definitely was. You know, and like when you can just say, and look at the look on that guy's face, and you kind of look up and you see how angry and funny it is. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is cool. Now, that's the thing that, like, not a lot of people are doing. And it's very specific to the situation. And I did very much enjoy the bag of soup story. That was also.
Oh, my God. The really bag good. Of soup story was excellent. He is a funny storyteller, is what he is.
Right.
And sometimes he's more storyteller than funny. And other times he is extremely funny.
So, yeah, look, an interesting watch, but not the best thing I've seen. And again, every stand-up bit, it seems like a TED Talk now.
It does.
Which makes me miss, like, just jokes a little bit. Just jokes a little bit.
Particularly
for those who don't pull it off at the level of some of the really great ones we've seen in the last couple of of months.
Well, I think that's part of the problem, too, is, like, there have been a couple of real home run hitters over the last 6 months that I don't know if diminish is the right word, but it sets the bar really high.
Yeah, it's raised the bar. Totally.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. I think it's time for homework.
Yes, I think it is. Here's what I wrote down when we had our pre-show meeting about homework. Momentum Generation, which is a documentary, HBO doc, on Kelly Slater and his generation of surfers.
Yeah, there's a significant number of them. A much greater number than I realized. Like, I'd heard a couple of the other names, but it's a lot of dudes. And Look, I'm far from a surfing expert, and I'm guessing you probably are as well. And I think you'll learn a lot.
I don't know anything about surfing.
And it's beautiful, and there's some fantastic music. I watched it last night. I'm going to recommend you all watch
it. Quit spoiling it.
Okay.
Okay. Secondly, I wrote down Roma, the new film from Alfonso Cuarón, the director of Gravity.
Yeah, I can tell you Los Angeles has about 17,000 billboards up for this show right now.
I don't think anywhere else does. Maybe New York, who knows. But it is getting a lot of Oscar buzz. And, you know, it's an interesting, I think I called it a trial balloon when we talked about it before the show, in terms of releasing a film almost simultaneously on Netflix, because it comes out on Netflix on Friday. A film that in many ways is designed to be seen on a big screen and allegedly based around visuals, not unlike something like Gravity. But a lot of people, by nature of it being on Netflix on Friday, are going to watch it on their televisions, which, granted, are bigger than they used to be. But we'll see how it goes over, both with us and the public.
Yeah, I'll be one of those people watching it at home because it's easier. Yeah.
Absolutely. and then we've also got a new-ish Amazon show called Patriot that is getting very good reviews. It's the short version, it's a spy show, and it's been out for about a month, and we're going to check out a couple episodes.
Yep. I'm also
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm also going to watch the CT's wedding special on MTV.
Oh my God! Let me know how that goes. You might be able to sell me on that.
Okay.
We also mentioned earlier in the show we're gonna check out the
Billie Eilish. And you know what? I was looking at it. She doesn't really have a record per se, like an album per se. But there's a decent amount of music.
I mean, some stuff on Spotify?
Yeah, it'll all be on Spotify. I would say, like, if you go to Wikipedia and listen to her singles, there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Her Spotify picture is rather interesting.
There's 9 singles. That will probably cover it because her her other album came out in 2017. So.
Yeah, I can see a handful. There's a 2017 album and then a handful of singles since.
Yeah, so that might be an easier way to do it.
But, wow, did you say she was 16 now?
She's
active since 2016?
Let's see. She is currently 16, yeah. She's born, wow. born so she's 14, in December 2001.
So she was 14, 15. No, probably 14 when her first singles came out.
Yeah.
Holy moly. All right. Definitely going to check it out.
Yep. There you go. Billie Eilish. All right.
All right. I think that puts a nice bow on it. It'll just – bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.